Talking with Abby Ellen about her book, Duped, but the title of that song reminds me of something that I wrote a couple of years ago, an academic paper. It won, I presented it in Chicago at a Historical Association of Journalists, AJA. And the paper was about the famous time that supposedly happened when Senator Joe McCarthy was exposed on television by Edward R. Murrow, and that that night that he stood up to Senator McCarthy turned the tide on McCarthyism, and the way in which it's recorded in history is this, you know, sort of David versus Goliath showdown that took all this courage. But the effect was that it stirred a nation to respond in letters and calls and telegrams to CBS and all of the affiliates affirming Edward R. Murrow. And that's what started the demise of McCarthyism and Senator Joe McCarthy. The problem is it just didn't happen. It actually could not have happened. And I made this case in an article that I called Would I, EYE, in reference to the CBS eye, the all-seeing eye of CBS, would I lie to you? And they did. It's a myth. It's amazing, really, actually, because it, you know, whole movies, like Good Night, Good Luck, the movie with David Strathairn, which was an Academy Award winner, I believe, in some categories. But I mean, it's sort of again propagated the myth that that this had happened in such a way as to make the country just, you know, flood CBS with all of this positive response, and therefore, you know, cut off the oxygen for Joe McCarthy. And it's interesting when you find out that something didn't happen like that, because a lot of people would prefer the myth. They would prefer that, because the story, it's a better story the way that it's told, even though it's not true. And it was the creation of the CBS network's promotional department, and it worked. We'll just leave it there for the time being. But it just goes to show you, it doesn't have to be just one-on-one. Many of us want to be lied to because that the story that's being told is better than the one that's being lived. And we'll return to that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Abby Ellen is telling the backstory, which is sort of the spine, actually, of the, well, I guess that is kind of a backstory. It's the spine. It's funny. The backstory to the book Duped. And here we are, 5 months into a relationship with a guy she had known casually for a couple of years. Suddenly it turns romantic. She thinks, or she's been told, right, that he's former or active CIA. At this point,
well, that he had been a Navy SEAL in the past, and right, that he was often did secret missions, and that he had a vault full of medals for operations that did not officially exist.
Okay. He told you that he had that at one point he administrated the hospital at Guantanamo.
Yep. Which actually he did, but he had been It wasn't a promotion. He didn't really want that job, but they had him do it. And he treated high-level terrorists,
and he implied one of those was Osama bin Laden, without saying it.
Yep.
Okay. What else was in the category of, oh, my God, that's so amazing?
Well, it was amazing. Or his wife, he told me his ex-wife, he had rescued her, that she was held hostage in Iran, and that he had swooped in like Superman and plucked her out of captivity, and that's how they met.
Wow.
Yep.
How did he explain that? So was that part of his a black ops or some kind
of? Because I said when was this? This is impossible. What year was this? Because it didn't make sense. That he was 58, but it didn't make sense for it to be 1979. It didn't make sense. Their kids were. It didn't make sense, the numbers. So he said, no, it was a secret mission. You wouldn't have heard about it. Just like when he told me that he was held hostage in China. And I said, where were we in China? Same thing, secret mission. You wouldn't have heard about it. But which sounds insane, except
Right, supposedly. If they happened, somebody did them. The question is, did they happen?
Well, did they happen? I mean, did eventually somebody nailed Bin Laden, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, did somebody save his wife from captivity in Iran? It just wasn't him, or she was never in Iran. She wasn't kept
in Iran.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at.
There might be some wife somewhere who was
who had been somewhere. Sure,
right? Just wasn't the guy I was with. But yeah, I mean, I do believe that there are many, many, many unknown unknowns. To paraphrase our friend Rumsfeld, I believe that, and so I don't know what I don't know.
Okay, so he has he's charmed you, he has wooed you.
He's charmed my parents.
Yeah, it worked on your mom. Did your mom have a very positive vibe about him?
She did until I told her about Bin Laden, and she said there's something wrong with him, Abby. And I got really mad at her. I said, "You are so suspicious. It's because
So interesting.
Yep. I said, "It's because of you that I'm suspicious." She said, "There's something not right." He had also told us. So anyway, when we moved to Washington, we moved in together. Where do you live in Washington, D.C. if you're going to have a life of deception? We lived in the Watergate. So,
of course.
Right. Which was, I mean, it was, the irony didn't escape me at all. But we moved into the Watergate, and he had told me that he had to get cleared by the board, and that William Kennedy Smith had been on the board and interviewed him along with Placido Domingo.
What?
Yeah. And
Placido Domingo?
Well, he lived in the Watergate, and actually, I asked when I got there. I asked the people at the Watergate, I said, "Are they on the board?" And they said yes. And I said, "Okay." So both of them were allegedly, apparently, on the board. But my mother, when he told us that Placido Domingo interviewed him, my mother said, "Well, I don't know how that's possible because he's touring in Europe right now."
Right.
And the guy I was engaged to just kind of, you know, skated right over that.
Oh, how interesting. I don't know what that is, but it's probably my wife calling him because she loves older men in uniform. So when you said 58, I know my wife would fall for him too. Did we lose Abby?
No, I'm right here.
Okay, there was a weird call. We heard it on this end of
I heard it too. I don't know what it was.
Could it be the CIA hacking into this? So then you're all set to get married. Had you picked a date?
No. I did not.
Okay. So you're something about you is stalling.
Something. I did buy a dress, but that was more like I wanted a dress.
So,
So why not? No, we vaguely were like, maybe we'll get married in Las Vegas, maybe. But then I thought, well, maybe I should have a wedding. But I didn't want a huge wedding because I think huge weddings are stupid. But I don't know. I thought it'd be nice, you know, after being all these years, I thought it'd be nice to bring all my friends together. He didn't really have anyone that he wanted to invite other than his kid and his aunt. There was really...
Okay, we're getting that again.
I hear that too.
That's not uncommon, by the way. I know this a little bit about narcissists, sociopaths. They're very interested about closing the deal.
Yeah, that's right.
It's one of the defining characteristics, is that they know that they come on big and strong, and they, you know, they have this great game at first, and they kind of, you know, whisk people away into their fantasy, and then at some point, you know, moms start speaking up and people start questioning whether or not this story could possibly be true, and then it starts to wear off the magic, and that's when they feel most vulnerable, is suddenly they didn't close the deal. So they tend to propose quickly and then ask for a quick marriage, and you were resisting that, which is no doubt, even if it's not conscious in his mind, if he's a narcissist, sociopath, he knows that something's about to unravel.
Well, also, you know, when you think somebody being duped, I don't know.
Okay.
I'll tell you
what I'm going to do. I don't know quite. It could be your phone line. So why don't you do this? Why don't we, Michael and Donna back at the studio, maybe there's something going on now with that call. So why don't we hang up real quickly and call back to Abby Ellen, and I'll just talk for a second or so. We can do that. Michael, you in? Okay, we're going to do that. So we'll disconnect. We'll come back. Maybe somebody just got, you know, Kind of flaky with the line. Promo, emergency promo. Here I'll promote. My wife has a very successful podcast. I thought this is I pass it along to you if you're interested. My wife and a girlfriend of hers do a podcast. It's called The Best to the Nest, and it's on Podcast One. And sometime next week, my wife's podcast will break 200,000 downloads. Isn't that cool? She does it while she's also producing a television for Arizona PBS. But there you go. An emergency promo that I threw in there. Let's hope this is better. So he had to be getting nervous a little bit that you were resisting this, because the narcissist sociopath, like that, a predator, as you refer to him, he knows that he's got to, you know, he's got to seal the deal.
Well, and also, but the thing that I was saying that was so interesting about it is usually these guys, they want money, right?
Right.
This guy, like,
no,
you've got to go after somebody. You don't go after a freelance journalist.
Not always, though. It's not always about money.
Well, I'm adorable and charming and,
there you go,
and smart, yeah, clearly, but I'm also a royal pain in the neck, I guess I can,
right?
Swear, can I? So I was, you know, so if you're going to go for somebody, you don't go to somebody who's going to question you every 5 seconds, and that's what
but
I did. And I think he was getting sick of me, frankly.
Maybe that's true, but something about you must have validated him as a predator. And he also, you know, predators have this, they have an innate sense. Here we go again. So somebody, we'll bear with this to the bottom of the hour, and since this doesn't appear to be an intrusion on your line, it might be on mine. So at the bottom of the hour, Michael, we'll break off when we head and then we'll reestablish contact. So, but that's kind of, I'm kind of intrigued by that idea, because when you mentioned that he didn't have any friends, that's also a pretty good indicator of somebody who's a narcissist sociopath, because they tend to burn bridges everywhere when people catch on to their BS.
Exactly. He had a few friends, but he didn't really like them very much. And I met them, but he was two-faced with them as well. He really was. One of them said, you know, you're my best friend. And he said, you're my best friend too. And the guy said, really?
Yeah.
He said, funny. Yeah. And I thought, you don't even like him.
Funny.
Yeah.
So what started the unraveling? When did you start to figure out something was wrong?
You know, when I finally started to figure out that something was wrong was when I would always question him. He gave me some pearls, okay? And he told me they were Mikimoto, which is a very fancy brand. And I looked and on the clasp, but you know, I thought maybe it would have an M, and it didn't have an M. And I said, these are not Mikimoto. And he said, look, he got mad at me. He said, you know, you're always questioning me. I don't know. The guy said they were Mikimoto. That's what I thought. So I go to the store in New York City. I bring them to them, and they're like, yeah, these are not our pearls. So there were little things like that that kept happening. And he would take off, and he would call me. He would say, I'm going to be in Iraq or Afghanistan, and I'll call you when there's a secure line. There was never a secure line.
Right.
He was waiting to see the vault full of the metals for operations that didn't exist. I mean, all these weird things. So, but finally, the end came after something that was I could finally verify, and it was this. We went out to dinner with my parents in Washington. We had Brussels sprouts, and he loved these Brussels sprouts. He raved about them. And we got outside, my parents went away, and he said, God, that was the worst meal I'd ever eaten in my life. And I said, why did you rave about them? Why did you tell everyone my parents didn't care? And he said, I wanted to make them feel good.
What?
Yep. And I said, what? Exactly. And he said, I wanted to make them feel good. And so that was kind of that. I said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. Because if he could lie about something so inconsequential, he could lie about anything.
So that confirmed in you, though, some sort of suspicion about him being a pleaser?
Being a fabricator, being a liar.
Okay.
He would always just say things to make people feel good. He'd like telling his friend that he was his best friend, this guy that he didn't like. I just didn't believe it. Didn't believe it. What can I tell you?
His friend was like human Brussels sprouts. You know,
his son was so excited for us to get married, And his son, when he told him that he proposed, his son said, what took you so long? And then after that was, so when this Brussels sprout thing happened, that was November of 2010. And in December of 2010, I was with him and his kid and his brother-in-law and everybody in their house in Georgetown. And I overheard his son saying, what's that on Abby's finger? Is that from you? And I couldn't hear the response, but I thought,
wait, I thought you'd already told him, and he was already excited.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I said to him, yo, what's up with that? He said, oh, he must have forgotten. And I said,
oh, what?
Kids don't forget that their father's getting remarried.
Exactly.
And that was the end of it. So I said to him, listen, I had rented my place in New York. So I said, we can stay in the Watergate together, and you can have the bedroom. I'll have the living room. It's fine. And then when I figure out somewhere else to go in Washington, I'll go. 2 weeks later, he said, Abby, we have to both be out. The Navy needs the apartment. And
the Navy needs the apartment.
Yes, the Navy needs the apartment. So I'm going to take everything out in storage, and I'll ship your stuff back to New York, and that'll be that. And I said, okay. And that's what he did. And a few months after that, I drove by the Watergate, and I saw the light on in the window. And I said to him, I called him up because Nancy Drew. I called him up,
right.
And I said, hey, you're back. He said, yeah, it was a comedy of errors. I moved everything out, put everything in storage, and then the Navy said, oh, we need you back. So I moved everything back in, and I said, well, I have to come by and pick up my cookbooks that I had left there, which is really not true because I don't even cook. But anyway,
right.
I wanted to see what was going on. And I went into the apartment, and everything was exactly as I had left it when I left.
Funny.
And exactly, down to a sliver of soap in the soap dish.
Right.
And I looked at him, and I said, you never left. And he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, yes, I did. And I thought, okay, one of us is nuts, and I don't know who.
Right. Yeah, well, then this begins your search, then, to try to figure out.
Wait,
no?
This was not the beginning of it. So that was the end of it. That was the end of the relationship.
Right.
I beat myself up for about a year and a half thinking,
oh, I see.
Man, did I blow the best thing that ever happened to me, until my phone rang. My phone rang in March of 2012, and it was Special Agent Dan Ryan with NCIS, which is Naval Criminal Investigative Service.
I've seen the show.
You've seen the show. Sadly, it was not Mark Harmon. He said, there's a doctor who's writing prescriptions for Vicodin and other drugs, and he's been using a bunch of names, and yours is one of them. Do you know this guy and do a prescription for narcotics?
Oh,
and I said, I know this guy, and no, I don't have a prescription for Vicodin. I like Valium. And
right.
That was pretty much that. And he went to jail. I had to make a statement. He was doing this to people he worked with at the Pentagon. He was using the, you know, identity of his dead mother, his dead father, his ex-father-in-law,
right.
Me, everybody. So he went to jail for 2 years and one day, and I kicked into journalist mode. And that's when I called his ex-wife, and that's when I discovered he had had an ex-ex-wife whom I didn't know about.
Right.
His ex-wife had never been in Iran. She had never set foot in the country. He met her in medical school when he was married to the other woman, the first woman.
Right.
Found out he was engaged to another woman while he was engaged to me. That after, while he was with me, he was sort of courting this other woman as well, whom he ended up with. She was someone he had known like 30 years ago. And she actually was the one who nailed him. She wore a wire.
She wore a wire?
Yep.
Was that for NCIS or for you?
No, for NCIS. She's the one who caught him.
Wow.
So it was, and then actually, sadly, she died. But she and I had a conversation as well, and she said, yeah, I didn't believe half the stuff you told me. She said it didn't make sense. She had come from a military family, and nothing he said made sense. But that's a thing. People, you know, a lot of these liars, a lot of these, they lie about being in the military. It's called stolen valor. And it's actually, it's if you use it for monetary gain, it's illegal. It's protected
right.
under free speech. But that's what a lot of them do. A lot of these, they pretend to be doctors or
right.
executives or military people because they're people you wouldn't question.
It's that craving for authority. It's the veneers of our honorifics that sort of fill a hole. Yeah, I'm all about that. I hear about that all the time. All right, so hang on then. Fascinating. The story is duped. Abby Ellen telling us about the bullet she dodged by not marrying this guy. But then we'll get back into the research of what she's found out about liars Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Potted. So we're talking with Abby Ellen. She's told the story about how she just avoided at the last minute, really, a marriage to a guy who is a narcissist sociopath. This is pathological liar. And that after a year of sort of mourning of the loss of the relationship, she starts getting around to investigating it more, finds out he ends up going to prison because he's been running a scam on the side of selling prescription drugs and more. And so we'll ask her about her. What did she find out in the research about lying, about liars, about the people that make a habit of that? And why is it that we are so easily deceived? Did she ever find out why she herself, a trained journalist, somebody who had already been asking questions all along, was still falling for it, at least 98% of it anyway? We did check the lines. We think we got rid of this, you know, this kind of mysterious phone dialing that was going on. We don't know where it was coming from. For all I know, it's my dog, Jack, who's ordering more stuff off television. I guess we'll find out next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Abby Ellen, author of Duped, will give you the numbers coming up at the top of the hour. You can join the conversation then. So what do you think you know, or what do you think we should know about liars, either in specific, the guy that you were in relationship with, or the predators that are out there perhaps waiting for us all?
I'll tell you what it is. They're really smart. They're really smart. They are often really good looking. And, you know, and we also give a lot. We know this. We give better-looking people a lot of latitude, don't we? And people still to this day can't believe that Ted Bundy did what he did because he looked so nice, didn't he? He was so good-looking. Nobody could buy it. It was amazing. They're really smart. They will make you feel like you are the only person in the world that matters. They will just charm the pants off of you, literally. And then when you start to ask questions, they will go on the offense. They'll make you think there's something wrong with you. They will have a story for anything. A lot of it won't be verifiable, but some of it will. And if you think about it, it might make sense. Actually, like, it could be possible.
Right. And your inclination to accept the unlikely may be an indication of your own psychological issues. And I think I'm not necessarily, you know, pointing the bony finger of blame at you, but I just mean in general, people have to accept that if there's a predator in your life, you're giving off some sort of signal that you could be prey.
Well, that was something that I investigated. I wanted to know. I don't see myself as a victim. I don't like victim mentality at all. I just don't see myself that way. I had an experience, and that was that. But I wanted to know what it was that. What it was in me that A, made me so interested in what he was saying, and also what was it in me that made him interested in me. And so I talked to this woman named Sandra Brown, who runs programs for women who've been in relationships with these kind of guys, these predators, these toxic men. And what she said was, and it was very interesting, she talked about these super traits, which are these characteristics that we all have. But certain super traits kind of jive with his personality. So there were things like agreeableness. She had me take this little test and score myself on different traits. And one of the things I had was agreeableness and extroversion and I think it was conscientiousness. And the two of them, agreeableness and extroversion, are exactly what somebody will like. They will latch on to that. Because if I'm extroverted, I'll talk to everybody, and if I'm interested in hearing a story, I'll want to hear a story. And so I'm agreeable. They'll find me safe to talk to. They're not going to talk to an introvert because the introvert's not going to talk to them. So I thought that was really fascinating. And so how do you then change who you are? How do you change what is inherent in your personality? Can it be changed? And that's something that I have to be conscious of it. So now I err absolutely on the side of I just assume everyone's guilty now. I believe absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. But these are things that we all have to, you know, they also look for people who are vulnerable. I think I had told him that
this guy that, you know, a year or so earlier, I had just broken up with another guy. And, you know, he knew that. I said to him, I don't need any more bad relationship experiences. I've had enough. You know, I've done that. I've mastered that. And
right.
he said, me too. Me too. It's time for something good.
Right.
So it seemed like we were on the same page. But what was that? That was just sort of a signal to him that I perhaps was maybe somebody he could get one over on or try to.
I had mentioned earlier that I have a friend who's a psychologist, who's a therapist, and he works a lot with the people who are in relationships with narcissists.
Yep.
He told me, I told him about some of my relatives that had been in these kind of relationships where, how duped my grandmother was by a guy who is, you know, stealing checks from her father, who was selling swampland in Florida and had another family on the other side of town. And he said, you know, he goes, well, I don't know if you want to know this about your grandmother, but he said, that tells me a lot about her too, that there was that it's a codependency. It's not a victimization. It's a codependency. There was something, she was getting something from him that she needed from him that she couldn't get from a normal relationship.
That's right. And it sounds like your guy was kind of charismatic and exciting. And I mean, your guy, your
grandfather.
Right. He was charismatic. He was charming. He was a lot of fun to be around. And that's, I didn't want some kind of boring 9-to-5 guy. That wasn't what I wanted. This guy had this kind of big life. And I said that before. The moral of the story is I create my own big life.
You know?
I don't need someone else to do it for me. But I wanted to have somebody do it with me, I guess, is really what I wanted. I wanted a partnership. And
when you were,
you know, when you left somebody, you have extra incentive to believe them because you want to be in love.
You, when you described him many times with the whole thing about the CIA and I have to leave and I have to get a secure line, I'm reminded of the John Paxton character in True Lies. Right. I mean, it had the same high level. It's so overwhelming and it can't possibly be true, but it's alluring in its own way. What do you find out? So are men and women generally equally good at lying?
You know, it's interesting because a lot of these stories, most of these stories we hear about are in the romantic arena, are men doing it to women. However, women are very much capable of doing it, and they often don't get caught. So there's an argument to be made that we're better at it.
Right.
And then you look at Elizabeth Holmes. Look at Theranos.
Right.
Right. That she's a woman. I mean, she held this major scam. There was a woman named Rita Cronwell who absconded with $62 billion from a little town called Dixon, Illinois, and she was a city controller.
I've been in Dixon. Dixon got robbed.
Dixon got robbed from the city controller.
That's the birthplace of Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, you got it exactly right. Which it brings it all full circle because what was it that Ronald Reagan said? Trust. Verify.
But verify.
And I say verify, but still don't trust. But that's
but she got away with $52 million again, probably on the presumption of who would have suspected the kindly old female bookkeeper.
Exactly. She wasn't old, she was sort of a hottie, but yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You don't expect that. And again, it's somebody, look, you don't expect the surgeon to not have a medical degree.
Right.
But then remember Waldo DeMara? He was the great imposter. Remember that movie? He was
passing the Tony Curtis movie, right?
Wasn't exactly, it? Exactly. As a Trappist monk, and he was a surgeon, and he was a social worker, and he was all of these things. And the irony is, he was great at everything. He was a really good surgeon. He was operating on a Navy ship, in fact. And when he passed himself off as someone else, and when the guy's mother called up the Navy and said, that's my son, and that's not my son. That's my son's right here in where I'm in this little town. And they didn't believe it. They didn't believe that DeMara was an imposter because he was so good. He was saving lives.
Right.
So that was the story, and he stuck to it. Yeah.
So, and Frank Abagnale from
Totally. Catch you if you
yeah,
can.
Catching the Can, and other people who were good at that. There is something we, I think, we like about that. How do you define that? The people that are kind of getting away with something, does it go back to the mythological prototype of the trickster
Oh,
that we just
yes.
we can't help
Yes.
but admire him at the same time we don't want it to happen to us, but we kind of like the fact that it happened to somebody else.
We do. It's the reason we all crane our necks when there's a train wreck or a car wreck. But that was what was so interesting to me was, everything I've read was all about the dupers and everything about how these people do it. But I wanted to know what happens to the people on the other end. What
Right, the
happens to
duped.
someone like your grandmother or grandmothers? Yeah, the
Right.
dupes. How do they then make their How do they live their life after that? How do they move on? Did your grandmothers get divorced? What did they end up doing?
Yeah, so actually this is, I mean, it's interesting to me anyway. My paternal grandmother, the one who was cheated on by the swampland guy with the other
Yeah.
family, her maiden name was Punnett. Her married name was Smith. He was like John Smith or something. And when she kicked him out, all of the kids went to court and they all had their name reverted back to her maiden name. So they all dumped the official family name at that point. I would be named Smith if it weren't for that. And this was that was how she did it. And
Yeah.
they literally like excised him in every way possible from their lives. Like he didn't even like he had never existed. They never talked about him again. They were not allowed to talk about him again.
Did she remarry?
Later in life, yeah, like much later in life, in retirement, she married a guy who couldn't, who was kind of handsy, who was like again kind of a weird guy, that he would often like pinch the my girl cousins and stuff like that. But this was interesting too. On my mother's side, my maternal grandfather who had cheated, which he was kicked out of the house, they got divorced, he left and only came back in like 16 years later. They reunited, and then my mother was born. So my mother is 17 years younger than her older sister. And my it was only the it was a freak thing because my grandmother, because of the venereal disease, never thought she could ever conceive again. But she did get
Oh,
back
wow.
together again when he had sort of attempted to redeem himself and spent years, on the road in isolation before she let him back in.
Oh, this is fascinating.
Is
Let's
it?
talk about you for the next 2 hours. I'm usually
I don't think so. These are all stories I've told. The people are sick of hearing them. But it is interesting that I mean, I just think cheating in that way. I wonder, like, do we think there's a cheating gene? I mean, is it kind of thing like alcohol where a lot of people have it but it doesn't get activated, or is that there is no nature nurture argument here?
No, I think there is a nature nurture argument. Some people think that liars have different brains. There have been studies that show that people who are pathological liars, they actually have different brains. And the other thing that happens, though, is that when you tell a lie, there's a part of your brain that lights up.
Oh.
And the more you tell this lie, a lie, it gets dimmer. So you start to believe your own lies,
Right.
which is so fascinating to me. But anyway, I don't know. I don't know. It would be interesting because nobody knows if it's nature or nurture. You grow up in a household where everybody lies and where lying is the norm. Well, and getting away with stuff and stealing and cheating and suspecting everybody, then that might be the way you become. So is that nature? Is that your predetermined personality? Is it just what's been formed? I don't
Hardwired
know.
in. Yeah.
Yeah, we
Yeah, I
haven't.
wonder too in a house too where there's a lot of lying that lying becomes just a survival technique, right? Like anything else. And so you're not may not even be any more conscious of the fact that you are constantly lying. You don't have it doesn't there's no contrast to the truth. It's not like there's and that's frequently is why, in alcoholic dysfunction, in houses that were where there was a lot of alcoholism, and there's a myth that's created. Dad's not an alcoholic; he just works too hard, and occasionally he does X, Y, or Z. Or mom's not an alcoholic, and they fill in the blank for why that's not true. And then somebody grows up to be the truth teller, and they're the ones who get attacked by the rest of the family, even though they're
That's
stating the
right.
quite obvious. We're all adult children of alcoholics. look what's happened to us. They're the ones who become, you know, the object of the family ire.
Exactly. We tell us, you know, whatever we tell ourselves to get by becomes our norm. So if you grew up in a household where this is what everybody does, then you don't think it's abnormal, right? So you would end up doing it yourself until somebody says, wait a minute, this is not right. This is not good. You're not supposed to be telling lies left and right. Not supposed to be drinking a quart of, you know, vodka right before breakfast. I mean, not, you know.
Well, then there are the lies of omission, right? They're the lies that we don't covertly commit. We do them by not telling the whole truth when we could have. And then it's a passive lie in the sense that the assumption is made on the recipient's end, and they are the ones that kind of fill in the wrong blank, and we're happy to let them, if that's what we're committing.
Exactly. I went out with somebody recently who told me he was an old friend from high school and had kind of come around, and a friend of mine and ours was sort of pushing us together. And what he told me, he had been sort of vaguely seeing somebody. He was divorced from his wife, but that he'd been seeing somebody, but, you know, nothing. He didn't tell any of us the truth, which is that he actually had this girlfriend. He'd had her for the last 2 years. And I didn't really care. I wasn't invested in this person at all. My
right
friend was really upset. She was really upset. She said, this guy and I had really long conversations about life and marriage and divorce and children and all that stuff. He didn't once mention that he had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
She felt that was a huge lie of omission, and that really bothered her.
As you reflected back, what do you think is the biggest lie you've ever told? Or can you rank them? Do you relate to your own?
I did that in the book. I did a little lie log, and I realized I can talk my way in anywhere. I am quick on my feet, but I don't usually. I'm a fan of white lies. You know, I think that if you don't know somebody or you're at work and somebody's wearing a brown velour jumpsuit and they look like Yoda, you don't need to tell them that when they're in the office. You know,
right.
I mean, there are ways
right
you could say you look fine, maybe don't wear that again, but you don't have to tell them the truth. I, with my close friends, I'm pathologically honest. I'm brutally honest. I think close friends deserve that. But so with the kind of things that I lie about, for example, I had a friend of mine came over and she wanted some cheese sticks, you know, and I told her I didn't have any. I had two left. I lied about it. I was at the gym, and I don't know why I did this. The teacher asked us, I was in a spin class. The teacher said, okay, how many of you rode 15 miles? And, you know, I said, I rode 12 miles in the hour. And she said, that's great. Well, I didn't. I had only ridden 10. I don't know why I lied about that. I mean, so those
right
are the kind of things I noticed that I was lying about. It was just, and also the big one is that everybody does is I'm 5 minutes away. You know, and they're
right
not 5 minutes away at all. They're about a good 10, 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
And it's also, yeah. And also, you know, I can't go out, you know, I'm busy when in fact you're not busy at all. That's a big one that everybody does.
I was more intrigued by the story I read where you talked about the ring of a previous.
And you like that?
Well, I think it's problematic. I mean, I'm sort of intrigued by it. So I'll have you, because we're coming up at the top of the hour. I'll ask you to give that story coming up next hour, because it takes a little bit to tell, but it's worth it. This is the guy directly before the commander, the Navy SEAL commander?
No, this was the commander. The ring, this was him.
The ring was him. Okay, interesting. Okay, and then I was conflating that. All right, so then we'll get to that. That part about the ring and how you actively covered up for him. And then we'll also give the numbers at the top of the hour so that everybody could join the story. My apologies, Abby. The book only came late yesterday. So I was cramming as much as I could today, but I also had about 40 papers I had to grade. I'm
you
a professor.
Could be lying and I wouldn't know.
No, but I'm just being honest with you. That's why usually I have my books a little more buttoned up than this, but I didn't get it until the last minute, and I had to do a lot of grading today. So I didn't get to it in the timely manner that I am used to. But it's still, I also heard the interview that you did with the Satellite Sisters, and they're old friends, and I very much enjoyed hearing that. Knew you had to have you on. Duped, double lives, false identities, and the con man I almost married. So you could talk about coming up your own story. Abby's already said she likes to hear these. So the biggest lie, how somebody duped you, or how did you stop yourself from being duped? What did you ever do that prevented that? We'll give you all the numbers you need to join the conversation. We'd love to hear those stories of dupedness next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.